the history of the WWE, the custody of a child will be determined in a match.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
Hulk Hogan is a jabroni, Hollywood blonde, but my boss, Mr. McMahon, is not jabroni.
Get a horse of time, fool.
Put that cigarette out.
Will you stop?
Woo!
What is up, Drunk Marks? Welcome to another episode of Drunk Wrestling History. If you don't remember me, my name is Adam. I am your designated host. It is so good to be back here. And welcome to our episode. I've been dying to get back behind the mic here. But before we go any further, to paraphrase Brock Lesnar during the Rumble, who the fuck are these guys?
Very good. This is Eddie, Woozle Wuzzle.
And this is Scott. Drinking is my business. Business is good.
So this is the first episode after the San Diego experiment, as it's been referred to. I remember when you all said that you were going to San Diego. I was like, oh, this is so great that I literally went into a whale's vagina. And whoa. It was...
I don't think you know what literally means. Or do you? And
no, seriously, I can you actually totally did that. Make that up. Yeah. Of course. New Year's plans went a very different direction, but that's okay because I absolutely love the job that Carissa and Shannon did. I hope that all of you were entertained by having some hosts who knew how to put away a few, and they had so much fun doing it. I hope all of you enjoyed it. But regardless, thank you so much for listening in. Before we jump into anything, what do we have poured up for tonight? What are we drinking?
Well, I'll just point out, I'm glad you said that we know how to put away a drink or two, because we definitely do. And,
absolutely.
And you guys know, the regular listeners who've heard this before, you guys know we don't record these necessarily in order, right? We record a bunch at a time because we're not trying to kill ourselves with the alcohol.
It's not taxing.
Well, we're trying to kill ourselves slowly, right? We don't want to do it like this year. We want to...
Yeah, quickly is boring.
Yeah, so we already recorded one episode, which you will hear... I'm tempted, X amount of time. I don't even want to tell you when you'll hear it, because you'll know it when you hear it. But Shannon... was in rare form today, and
yes,
she
rehearsed.
She's already passed out on the couch, and I imagine
episode two of the recording docket.
Okay, so we recorded one episode of Shannon passed out, and she's next. She's on the couch with the garbage can next to her, and what time is it? It's 5:30. It's 5:30. Yeah.
She got her shit in and passed out.
Yep. Yeah. Good for her. So as to your question, what we're drinking. I'm killing Scott's Corona from the last episode because someone brought him a Corona he didn't want. But my main drink for the episode, back to the classic Rickard's Red, my favorite beer from Canada, my special occasion beer that I can only get when I'm in Canada. I had five left. I just cracked number five. I got four left to last me till next time I'm there in the fall.
And I've got Crown Peach tying on a Gentleman's Buzz and Sprite the Chase.
Ew. The Iron Sheik would hate you for that.
He'd humble me.
He would humble you.
In my particular case, as you know, I'm the designated host. I want to make sure that these guys are still up front, have a microphone in their faces. But in the meantime, in honor of Drew McIntyre winning the Royal Rumble, that night, I actually ordered some Iron Brew from the interwebs. And that's what I'm going to be putting away right now. It is a Scottish soda, or at least from the UK. Last time I had it, it was the day before one of our close friends' weddings because there was a fish and chip shop that was owned by a guy from Scotland there. And he had it served up. And then the only time prior to that was when I was actually in Scotland. So in honor of the festivities of the week... That's what's being put away tonight. So, salud. L'chaim, everyone.
Salud.
Dive.
Cheers.
Adam, I'd like to point out that was a good... I've never heard you do a Scottish accent before, and that was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
We do have a handful of listeners in the UK. Actually, the UK is our second most... the place we get the second most downloads from.
Super cool.
And they might disagree, you know. But to me, it sounds pretty authentic. And if you guys are in the UK... tweet us and let me know what you think about, or let Adam know, or me know, whoever. Tweet at drunk, yeah. At wrestling at drunk. Let us know what you think. But I was pretty impressed with that, to be quite honest.
Well done, sir.
I'm happy to entertain. And also, if I'm mispronouncing the drink, just let me know. But at least from, I'm convinced that's what it is. Iron Brew, maybe.
Let's get a whiff of it first. Like before you suck it down, let's get a whiff first. What are we smelling?
All right, so for those of you that are just listening to this right now, Iron Brew is an orange soda. I mean, I don't really smell citrus. I mean, the sugar is definitely dense in this. I mean, if you guys want a quick whiff.
Suddenly we're doing a podcast about soda.
It just smells sweet. I'm not getting citrus off of that.
The great soda hunter would like this.
Oh, he totally would, yeah. Right?
We're hitting off of all demographics. Drunk with alcohol, drunk with power, all that good stuff. Let's see if it still tastes as good as it does. You definitely get a bubblegum aftertaste.
It smells like bubblegum. Yeah. I thought I was getting,
I mean, it is still very sweet, but yeah, you get that aftertaste, but it's not something that's going to bug you. It's like a very interesting, entertaining flavor. And yeah, it still tastes good.
All right.
Thank you very much, Interwebs, for providing such great sugariness.
It's a claim word of the mouth.
So before we get started, so you will be listening to this the first Friday. Today's the first, right?
Correct.
The first Friday of February. So it would be the last Wednesday of January. I put out a tweet for a Sable air freshener, and I said, we'll announce it on the air. By now, if you're hearing this, if you won, you would have been, everyone will know, but whatever. I'm still going to do it live on the air because that's what I said I'm going to do. So right now, I'm going to do the little random name generator. I'm going to get a video of it. I'll tweet it. That's where you guys will find out first. And here we go. I'm going to announce on the air who, it's not actual air, but on
not
the podcast.
Not really air, yes.
Right. But here we go.
And the Sable air freshener, folks, smells like Legos and Brock's sweat.
The winner is... Oh, fuck, dude, you won.
Wait.
You guys, so I just copy and pasted everyone who retweeted this.
I'm so
Scott
embarrassed.
Actually won this. So okay. I'm gonna do another
victory
one.
Speech. Hold on, victory speech.
All right, here we go. I'm going to do it another random one again.
I'd like to thank everyone for entering.
Stop it.
Fuck you guys. I got this prize.
Here we go again. I can't believe that happened.
I'll throw it back to the hopper.
The winner is... Jeff at Verbal Sows 37. That's the way. Do you know him? Do you know Jeff?
I do not.
Okay. Wow. Look at that. We have a listener who is not a Fully Posable listener.
Who's not from Fully Posable. So that's great. Or he might be, and I just haven't corresponded with him before, but
so,
that's great.
All right. So Jeff won. Jeff, yeah. Jeff's the guy that does the really cool the figure photography. I think, right?
Then he's definitely corresponded with Fully Posable.
Okay, before. Yeah. He does really cool stuff. It looks like comic books. I've retweeted it a bunch of times. Anyway, Jeff, thank you for listening. Thank you for following us. And just to give a shout out to him, you guys should all follow him because it's Twitter. And I hope I got the right. I hope I'm not putting over the wrong person for the cool Twitter. But it's Jeff at, and it's his Twitter name is at Verbal Soze, S-O-Z-E, 37. So... You won the Sable air freshener, and I'm going to be hitting you up with the DM.
Congrats, dude.
Good job, Jeff. Way to retweet. Retweet skills.
Skills.
Retweet skills are very strong.
All right, so let's get started with the episode.
All right. So, it is now February. Let's jump into it. It is Black History Month. A lot of wrestlers that have made either an entertaining or a hard-hitting impact with their performances inside the ring, outside the ring. They've definitely entertained us. There are so many to go over. Who are the ones that stand out with you to start out with?
Well, you have the list.
Oh, right.
Well, first of all, let me just preface this. We plan on still doing this podcast a year from now. Livers surviving, assuming.
Permitting, yes.
So we actually kind of cut the list. We had a huge, huge list. We had to cut a lot of names, and we didn't cut from like, we didn't cut the lesser people. We tried to cut it kind of randomly.
Right.
Because I was like, we don't want to knock. First of all, we want to keep the episodes to like a reasonable length. Second of all, we were like, well, why do everyone all in one year? Like, let's save some for next year and the year after.
It's by no means a comprehensive list.
Right. So if we're leaving someone out, normally I like when you guys tweet me and say, you know, I've gotten tweets about Big Man You Forgot. If we left someone out this year, don't fucking tweet me.
Yeah. Yeah. We know.
No, I'm just kidding.
We know.
Tweet me and I will actually add it to our list of who didn't make it this year. Thank you.
Are we just going to go in order on this one?
Yeah, I think we just run right down the list and we'll just, you know, weigh in on each of them.
Also, let's just say, Tessa Blanchard, this podcast probably isn't for you.
Yeah, right now, you haven't invested too much time into this. You might as well bail now.
Yeah, we know you hate drunk people, Tessa Blanchard, so not for you.
Oh my God, she hates drunk people?
She does.
Ew.
She's a horrible person.
Oh, I could forgive the rest. Nobody's perfect, but fuck. All right, let's dive right in, Adam.
Number one on here, affecting the wrestling world from really not too long ago now, the late, great Rocky Johnson.
Yeah, so I put him on the list. I think you might have too, but I was like, well, as of a few weeks ago, he is now Black History.
He is, from numerous aspects, in that he was the first Black WWE tag or WWF tag team champion with Tony Atlas. So absolutely Black History in the WWF. And he's The Rock's dad.
Was he the first guy with a build like that? I mean, like, Bruno was a big, big muscle guy, but a guy with, like, that was cut. Like,
well, he and Tony Atlas were, like, the same guy.
Okay,
Rocky Johnson was a little bit shorter, but him and Tony Atlas were just cut, dude.
Right. Nobody ever looked like that before, right?
No, definitely not.
Because I think they were even a little before Superstar. Right, it's Billy Graham.
No, Superstar was before then. Like, they came in around, like, 82, 83. So, Superstar was before them.
Well, not in WWE, but I'm saying in general. Because, like, well, Rocky Johnson was a fucking legend in the Bay Area, right?
Right, right.
Particularly him. Tony Atlas, not so much. But Rocky Johnson was one of those guys. So, we live in the Bay Area, you guys. And, if you don't know. And he's one of those guys where if you talk to, like, I don't know, old people. Like, dudes, like, almost as old as Scott.
Almost.
They'll talk about, I used to go to wrestling at the Cow Palace, and there are a handful of names that come up. There's, like, Patterson.
Patterson, yes.
Right?
Ray Stevens,
Peter Maivia, and yes. Rocky Johnson. Those are, right. Like, the four. And Rocky Johnson's, like, I don't even know how you... It'd probably be Patterson and Rocky, actually, would be, like, the kind of the top two.
Yes. And, there are and a few Ray Stevens, too, but, yeah, those would be, like, the top three.
Yeah, in the Bay Area, Rocky Johnson was a legend.
Yes, like, you, absolutely.
Yeah, so... So not that he was I know he wasn't in WWE before Superstar, but I don't know. I don't know who would have been like sort of high level famous first for having a huge like killer body, but we should have mentioned him on the hottest, whatever. Anyway, yeah, Rocky Johnson was great and he could work. You know what I mean? He was kind of like all those guys back then. Like everybody was pretty good in the ring. Like nobody was like kind of shitty.
No, yeah, he was definitely the soul man.
Yeah.
As his moniker implied. And with Tony Atlas, they were a great set of tag team champions.
Yeah.
And they definitely fit the bill. And it's a great entrant as number one in Remembrance of Black History Month.
Yeah, and it was really sad to see him die. And The Rock wrote out his eulogy. Or I don't think it was his actual eulogy, but wrote a little tribute on Instagram.
Right.
A very stellar, long, detailed one. Yeah. So much love in that one.
Mm-hmm. And he was one of those guys, 2008 Hall of Famer. I was there for that.
That's right.
And it was really cool. It was great night. You know, super, super happy for him. Awesome guy. Like I said, legend. Badass.
Yeah, and the first ever Black tag team champion in the WWF with Tony Atlas. So yeah, huge recognition.
Right.
Okay. Great that he's in the Hall of Fame. Absolutely well deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Right after him, we've already touched up on him, The Rock.
Well, I mean, there's no one bigger than The Rock.
Some might even have them on their Mount Rushmore of wrestling.
Hmm. Sounds like a good idea for a podcast.
Hey!
I mean, I don't know. Honestly, like, I feel like we might as well just keep the Rock part quick, because what can we say about the Rock that people don't know about?
What hasn't been
said other than he's Black? A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people only know he's Samoan, right? A lot of people, like people who don't know wrestling, they just think, oh, that Samoan guy, the Rock. But obviously his mom's Samoan, Peter Maivia's daughter.
Right.
and his dad was Rocky Johnson, and star of Hobbs and Shaw.
Well, okay.
Right?
You want to talk about fucking Fast and Furious.
You know me in those movies,
dude. I know you do. You get emotional.
Yeah.
But look, keeping it to wrestling,
yeah.
Is there a bigger star in Black history than The Rock? I don't think that there is. I think he is easily the biggest star to celebrate Black History Month. It's got to be The Rock.
I mean, look.
There's lots of names, but Rock's got to be the guy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, we would have to sit here for a couple hours and hash out whether he's, like, the top star ever.
Yes.
You know, like, that's arguable. Like, yeah, for a Black History Month guy, like, nobody. We should have saved him for last. What were we doing?
But it's easier for our purposes of this drunk show just to include him and say thank you.
Right. So it's all downhill from here, you guys.
Well, good luck, other people on the list.
Yep.
We've already touched up on him, his Rocky Johnson's partner, Tony Atlas.
So look at us making a list. We talk about Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas kind of at the same time. Then we put The Rock in and then we get back to to Tony Atlas. That doesn't even make any sense. We should have done both of them at the same time or one after the other. We broke it up with The Rock. So this shows the organizational skills of drunks.
Which would be none.
Exactly.
None.
Tony
Atlas shoddy at best.
Tony Atlas was, I think I first saw him, I had to have first seen him on Coliseum Home Videos. Because the first time I remember him being like a current superstar would have been a Saba Simba.
Saba Simba,
right? Which had to be like the most racist fucking... No, it wasn't the most racist thing Vince ever did, but...
It was not, but it was up there.
Up to that point, it was.
Yes, up to that point, for
I
sure.
I mean, what a... Like, that was crazy, dude. Like, even when I was like... I had to be like 10 years old, and he's Saba Simba, and he's got a spear and a shield.
And a shield,
Yeah, and it was one of the... I felt like I was watching one of those PBS shows where you see titties.
Yeah, and he's got a loincloth on. You're like, his dick's going to come swinging out.
Yeah, like, it was really crazy, but he was good. I mean, like we said, he was the first Black Tag Team Champion. He would fuck people up in the ring. He was so big. You know, like, everything he did just looked like it hurt.
He really was big. That's a great description of him. I actually watched a Saturday Night's Main Event from 85. He teamed with Andre the Giant against King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd. And while his moves in the ring weren't crisp, you think of the guys in that match, Andre, Bundy, Studd, all huge guys. Tony Atlas stood up in that match. And he didn't stand out for being, like, the smaller guy. Like, he was all cut up, and you saw that he could hang with those guys. So, yeah, Tony Atlas, and he didn't just do WWF. He did Global. He did WCCW. Like, he was involved in the rest. He's also one of the guys that witnessed Bruiser Brody's death.
Oh, yeah, right,
and
he
was
right.
A big witness in that. But aside from that, his contributions to the WWF, to World Championship, or World Class Championship Wrestling, second to none. Huge contribution and a very deserving name in Black History Month for sure.
He was also a guy who sort of had a like a minor comeback, like not a big deal, but he was on Legends House, right?
Oh, that's right.
Which
yes.
Legends House, I don't know how many people remember this. Legends House, they recorded a couple years before the network debuted because remember they were going to do the network and it was going to be like an on-demand service.
Right.
And then they scrapped it and like, you didn't hear shit about it for like 2 years.
And then they saved it.
Then they brought it back as what the network is now. Legends House was already shot before that because that was one of the first things they advertised for the original version of the WWE Network.
Right.
And he was pretty good on it. Like, I watched that. It was not like, it wasn't the greatest reality show of all time. Not that I'm huge into reality shows.
Well, sure.
You know, I mean, it wasn't as good as that one with...
like Watch Along or Jersey Shore.
We're going to have to do a whole episode about Watch Along at some point.
No,
I was going to say it's not as good as that one with Denise Richards or whatever the fuck.
The Bachelor.
Oh my God, don't even get me started on The Bachelor.
90 Day
Fiancé. But it was pretty good. I was entertained. It was good enough that I got through. I watched the whole thing. It was good. But remember he was, I think it was, I can't remember now. You might remember. Was it an NXT or was it ECW where he was someone's manager and his gimmick was that he laughed?
It was ECW. It was almost ECW, like a talk show host.
ECW, the guy's name was Abraham Washington.
Wait, so he
but
managed...
he was like the Ed McMahon
exactly.
to Abraham Washington's Johnny Carson.
Okay.
And he had the laugh. Like, that was his gimmick, was the laugh.
Do you want to do the laugh or should I?
Let me see if I can.
It's like Tony Atlas walking through the room.
That's better. That's better. Yeah.
It was great. I mean, it was like so stupid, but it was entertaining as hell. Like, I loved it. Like, Tony Atlas is... I don't doubt they could bring him back now. and figure out something to do with him.
Look, to be a guy from 85 and then to come back in 2008 and have some sort of gimmick in the WWE, like, that's longevity. A gimmick
that would catch on?
Absolutely.
To, yes.
Anyway, we have a friend. We've mentioned it before, and he loves it when we mention him, so I'll mention him again. Leonard. Leonard didn't even watch wrestling anymore, but I think maybe he'd seen clips of that on YouTube or something. And he would text me. He's like, dude, Tony Atlas is hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, that's how good Tony Atlas... It was,
yes.
And I mean, it was... Exactly. He would just laugh. It was funny as hell. It was great.
To go from a strong man in the mid-80s to a laughable gimmick in the late 2000s, like, right. Way to keep yourself relevant.
Right.
Kudos to Tony Atlas. And the dude's all...
And he's still got, like, 20-inch pythons.
Right. Exactly. Right. Maybe 23-inch pythons.
There you go.
Not as big as the 24s, but close.
Okay.
Who else we got on here? Kamala.
Kamala was great. I liked Kamala scared me when I was a kid. I was like, maybe like right at that age. Like, if I'd been born a year earlier, like, Kamala might not have scared me, but he was kind of still... I'm not sure if I think I knew what was going on with wrestling, but maybe I still was kind of like, okay, they know who's going to win, but this guy is still sort of this character.
And he's still eating live chickens.
Right. Like, I'm not sure. I think when Kamala, well, when he made his comeback, though, like right. In the 90s, right?
Right.
I think I was still sort of convinced he was from Uganda, right? He was a Uganda giant. Well, he was a giant.
He was a giant.
And, Kamala was great. He was, like, what a great character. I heard Jerry Lawler was the guy who came up with the character.
Yeah, and
right.
he was one of those prototypical big men in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, he was just big.
He was right. Big, exactly.
He was just big.
He was a wrestler because of size.
Yes, started his career, actually, as Sugar Bear Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And finished his career as Sugarfoot Harris.
Yes. And hit him up on Twitter if you need a chair.
We also have Junkyard Dog.
Oh, dude, don't get me started on Junkyard Dog. I absolutely loved the dog in the 80s. And it's my firm opinion that the dog was always suited to be one of those second-tier champions, either IC or tag team champion, that he never won the title, but totally could have. Like, he was well-suited to be an Intercontinental champion, but could have been a tag team champion as well. But he always seemed to be one of those guys that was like enhancement. Like, he was upper mid card, but he was always putting over newer talent or guys that they wanted to move to the upper echelon of the mid card. Like, the dog was always there. But for me as a kid, I loved the Junkyard Dog. I always wanted him to win either the IC belt or the tag team title. I didn't think he would ever win the World Heavyweight Championship. But he was always at the upper mid card to where I thought he should have won a championship and was always good enough to win one of those championships.
Yeah, Dog was fantastic. And Dog was one of those guys back in the day who was like right there, like kind of a household name. Like there was, you know, like a lot of people who didn't, they were aware of wrestling, but like maybe had never actually sat through an hour wrestling show on a Saturday morning. They knew there was a guy called Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
Right. Even like 2 years ago. Couple years ago at work, some dude was like, hey man, I was like, I saw WWE on the TV the other day. Like, who are those three black guys? And I was like, oh, that was New Day. He's like, man, I didn't even know they had three black guys. And I was like, well, that's kind of a strange comment. He's like, I don't know. He laughed when I said that. And he was like, I don't know, man. All I remember is Junkyard Dog.
See?
But he was never... But then I asked him, I was like, were you a wrestling fan back then? He goes, no, I just remember him.
Yeah,
but
household
he was,
name.
So he was on the cartoon, right?
Yes, he was.
Also,
voiced by Uncle Phil. From
right.
Prince of Bel-Air fame.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Also, he was one of the first, I know there's a podcast about this that Ryder and Hawkins do, but was he one of the first LJN? He was in the first like line of LJN figures?
He was, yes. But let me also point out that there was a wrestling figure podcast before theirs, actually quite a few years before theirs, that mentions JYD as one of the first LJN figures.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Oh, that's
okay.
Interesting.
But yeah, Dog was
way
great.
Way to keep your ear to the ground.
Dog was good. He was kind of, even when I was a kid, it was like kind of like, when's he gonna be champ or whatever.
Yes.
But he actually, I know he was a huge draw. I've heard that he like main evented the Superdome in the 80s.
He right? did for Mid South.
Yeah, but
he,
WWE, like for whatever reason, he just never really. He never even really became upper mid card, right? He
which,
just sort of was like kind of right there, and I don't know. I've heard that he got kind of lazy and out of shape when he got there.
Well, and you could kind of see that as the years went on.
Yeah,
you could kind of see it.
Right,
but. I mean, I think, honestly, single-handedly, he took Mid-South down. When he bounced out of Mid-South and went to WWF, you saw the downturn of the promotion.
Right.
They tried to bring up various black athletes that just did not fit the bill and didn't have the charisma of Junkyard Dog.
Right.
And they became UWF, eventually folding into NWA WCW, but they didn't have the Junkyard Dog to sell out the Superdome, brother.
Right,
and
right.
That star power just was not there when the JYD left, and it just speaks volumes about what he did for that territory in the mid-80s.
Yeah, super, yeah, great talent. Yeah, great wrestler, shitty driver. We all loved him.
Hell of a coke snorter, though.
There you go.
Next, who you have on here, WWE Hall of Famer, class of 2009, Coco Beware.
Well, you know, his bird is actually Black History. Burnt to a crisp.
Jeez.
Well, you know, what I've heard is, so actually we should have just written down Frankie on this list, not Coco.
Right.
Because Frankie was the star. Coco's arm was like second bill, because that's who carried Frankie into the ring.
Right. Frankie had a great match at WrestleMania 3 against Butch Reed, actually.
Right, right. Yeah, he sat on a little perch outside the ring. He was fantastic.
Sent his wrestler in to have the match.
Yes. Yeah, right. Called the shots from outside the ring.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was great. Frankie was awesome. He's a Hall of Famer, right? He was there in Houston 2009. I was there for that.
Yes.
And it was great to see Frankie get inducted in the Hall of Fame. He was the one wrestling animal that didn't get, like, molested, right?
Right. Was never kidnapped.
Right. Like, Matilda had a hard time. Frankie was okay.
Yes. Jake the Snake's snake. Damien got crushed.
He was squished.
Yeah, Frankie was never squished.
Right, no, but Frankie was a survivor, dude. And you know, these parrots, and here's the thing that's unfortunate. These parrots, they live like 400 years or something like that.
They do, unless you set fire to them.
Right, well, and that's what, unfortunately, the story I've heard was Coco was jealous because Frankie got on the t-shirts and the ice cream bars.
Into the Hall of Fame.
He got into the Hall of Fame, and Coco, he accidentally set his house on fire trying to cook Frankie.
Yes. Yeah. Accidentally.
Right. It was too bad.
Yeah. Poor Frankie.
Yeah.
Most recently from this past Sunday's Royal Rumble, who had a phenomenal showing entering as number two, is Bianca Belair.
Okay. I'll just start off with this.
I'll let you take this one.
So we kind of put this list together. I made a handful. Scott made a handful. Adam made a handful. And we sort of not whittled it down, because like I said earlier, we didn't want to take anyone out based on whether they deserve to be on this. It was just sort of like almost randomly taking out names so we can save good ones for later. Bianca Belair was on mine. I've been a huge Bianca Belair fan since she was in the Mae Young Classic. And I've said, actually, it just came up on Twitter the other day. Someone said, they put up a picture of her and they said, what do you think of her? I said, she's the best athlete in the company. Maybe the best athlete they've ever had in the company. Bianca Belair is fucking incredible. I loved the Women's Royal Rumble. The Men's Rumble was really good too, but the Women's Rumble, my favorite part of the entire show was what Bianca did in that Royal Rumble. She is just absolutely incredible. She's got, if she can stay healthy, she's got an insanely bright future. She's going to make $1 million. She's going to have a killer career.
Yeah, well, I don't see how you can argue against that. They gave her such a showing, and I honestly didn't see that coming. You and Daniel had actually spoken while we were watching the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. We could see them putting Bianca Belair in and giving her a hell of a run. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And then it actually came to pass, and it's like, dude, not only did they hand her that spot and say, go make it happen, she went out and made it happen, which goes to your point of her being a hell of an athlete, basically grabbing onto that spot that WWE's handed her and said, okay, I'm going to make myself a star. In the Royal Rumble, Bianca Belair made herself a star, and sky's the limit from here. I can't wait to see where it goes.
Right.
Kudos to her.
It was textbook, take the ball and run with it.
Totally. 100%.
Yeah, she did exactly what everyone wants to do when they get a chance in a match like that. Like, and I know, like, it's the booking, right? Like, she was booked to eliminate 8 people. She was booked to stay in it for 25 minutes or whatever, and like someone like Shotzi Blackheart was not, or whoever.
But she had to make it look good in the process.
And she did. She was believable. She looked fantastic. She is just, I mean, I see nothing but money on her. I'm a huge Bianca Belair fan. I love that figure they're making of her. That's going to be the first, honestly, that's going to be the first wrestling figure I bought in, like, not counting the pops.
Yes.
Like a decade.
Okay, so let's just go out of the show here for a second. Basic 107 in the WWE Mattel line, they are making a Bianca Belair, which, for those of you with the benefit of flash photography, she's going to be $9 at your local Walmart. I sent a picture to Ed the other day because I'm a huge wrestling figure collector. I'm like, dude, check out this Bianca Belair. I know you're a fan. And he was like, dude, I'm totally going to buy this figure, especially for $9. Mm-hmm. Kudos to her for the job that she did, for the spot that she was handed. We saw Becky, Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte given these spots back in 2014, 2015. Absolutely run with the ball. Take the women's revolution to the next level. Bianca Belair is right there, ready to take that next step with whatever women are behind her. Kudos to her for taking that ball and run with it in the Royal Rumble.
Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Very much.
Yep. Right, who's next?
We've got D'Lo Brown.
D'Lo.
I'll let you start on D'Lo, and I'll tell you my favorite thing that D'Lo ever did.
D'Lo was supposed to be kind of one of those Sideshow Bob characters, right? Like, he's just kind of part of the group.
Right.
He's not supposed to stand out. He's just kind of flavoring on the side, if you will. Like, Farouk is supposed to be the main draw, not D'Lo.
Right.
D'Lo, with his ability, not only on the mics, but in the ring, was able to kind of stand out from that and become Intercontinental and European champion at the same time, while at the same time breaking away from the Nation of Domination and making his own character. D'Lo was incredible back in the day.
Yeah.
Charisma, could go in the ring, was a decorated guy with the IC and European championships, was supposed to just be one of those sideshow guys in the Nation of Domination, and just took his career to the next level with the spot he was given, much like Bianca Belair in the Royal Rumble was kind of given a chance and saying, hey, let's see where you can take this. And just took that ball and ran with it. Kudos to D'Lo for having an amazing WWE career.
Totally. D'Lo Brown was incredible. He was great in the ring. He had more personality than I think the company even recognized.
You're right.
You know
what
I mean?
Like,
yes. Because he didn't get a lot of promos.
The head wiggle, right?
The fucking head wiggle.
Yes.
The head wiggle got over like Hogan putting his hand to his ear.
100%.
There was one time, it was awesome. I think it was on a Raw. I don't think it was on a pay-per-view, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Some dude in the audience made a sign and they cut out. It wasn't just like a card or like a rectangular sign. I don't know how they made it, but it was cut to be shaped like D'Lo. They drew D'Lo on it and they somehow made his head wiggle back and forth. Like his head was a separate piece of cardboard,
awesome.
Like maybe on a stick or something, but it was a wiggling head D'Lo, and it's just one of those silly wrestling things that catches on.
Yes.
And you loved him for it.
Yeah.
My favorite thing, I guarantee you nobody listening to this remembers this. And I just discovered this just recently, maybe a couple years ago. My favorite D'Lo Brown thing ever was, I think he was European champion, No Way Out 98, Fresno. We were there. Cheers. Oh, that's an empty bottle, but cheers anyway.
This is a full glass.
He wrestled, I don't even remember, honestly, like the biggest impression for me was not the match. It was who he wrestled. He defended, I think it was the European Championship, whatever title it was he defended. He won. He gets out of the ring, like he won kind of like strong. You know, like it wasn't like he could barely get out of the ring. Like he rolled right out and was ready to leave. He walks right past the camera and yells to the camera, "That was a title match! That was a title match!" It was incredible. Like nobody's ever thought to do that before. And it was just such a cocky, cunty, prick fucking thing to say. It was genius. I loved it.
It built onto his character that he had established. And that's the best part is like when you were part of one of those groups back in the day, Los Boricuas, the motorcycle gang with Crush, Nation of Domination, you were kind of stuck to your role.
Right.
Right? Like you were a sideshow guy unless you were Crush, Farouk, or Savio Vega. You stuck to your role. D'Lo Brown is the one that broke that mold and is like, no, I'm going to go on and be a single star. I'm going to go win some titles. I'm going to be a decorated guy in WWE and establish myself. Frog splash, stupendous. Head wiggle, that was one of his signature moves, as far as I'm concerned. What a career for that guy in WWE. For somebody that was supposed to be a role player but took the ball and ran with it, kudos to D'Lo.
But he also figured out how to fit in nicely with the group. But stand out, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like it was a really, like, it's almost like a delicate balance, like a I don't know, I can't even think of anyone else. That's how good it was. But he didn't feel like, not necessarily greater than the Nation, but he stood out, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You remembered him, like Kama Mustafa wasn't like that,
right?
Or even, I mean, The Rock was, but like Owen was, well, Owen That was a different story.
Totally different story. But if you say Nation of Domination, you think of the greatest members of that group.
Yeah.
Probably you're going to say Farouk number one because it's the great Ron Simmons. Damn!
Right.
Second is going to be D'Lo Brown.
Well, if you exclude The Rock.
Well, not included. Look, The Rock's on a level all his own, right?
Well, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Right. D'Lo Brown would absolutely be second for me.
Yeah.
Next one you got on here is former Million Dollar Championship winner, Virgil.
Oh, man. Virgil. Look.
Fuck my life.
That's funny you mention that. I actually have a picture.
Yes, you do.
Wearing a barbershop window t-shirt with a picture of Virgil that underneath just says FML. And I've got the picture with Virgil pointing at the shirt. Incredible. Look. Virgil was Soul Train Jones before coming into the WWE. He was kind of an indie guy.
Wait, is that true?
Yeah, it is.
Soul Train Jones is not a new name?
No. Soul Train Jones actually wore like American trunks. He had an Uncle Sam hat, like red, white, and blue with stars on it. Like,
so he was, the he ring. Was Apollo Creed.
He 100% was Apollo Creed without naming himself Apollo Creed.
I did not know that.
On the independent circuit before even coming to WWE. Million Dollar Man picked him up as a sidekick. Virgil came in and just tore it up. Like, you remember some of the biggest matches in the late 80s in the WWF. Virgil was involved.
Right, Virgil's kind of become the joke of wrestling lately. And actually, he's pretty cool because he sort of, like, plays into that.
Oh, he 100% does. Like, DiBiase will have a signing. Virgil just rolls up with his own table, and he's like, boom, $20 a signature.
Right, remember when we went to that WrestleCon, whatever it was, at the Cow Palace? And
yes.
I went over to Virgil, and he has the big sign that says Virgil and Ted DiBiase. I was like, hey, man, where's Ted? He's like, oh, man, Ted going to be here later. Ted never showed up.
Right.
It was like
yeah.
a thing. But
Virgil
like,
didn't know.
Right, but Virgil was... He was... Not to compare him to a Bobby Heenan, but he was one of those guys that, like Heenan, was right in the middle of all kinds of shit.
Oh, he was a huge role player in the 80s.
Troublemaker.
Oh, he totally was. And I've actually got a good Virgil story real quick.
Go ahead.
Big Time Wrestling. The great Kirk White here in the local area runs shows for BTW still to this day. Back in 2005, was running one of those meet and greet with old-time wrestlers. Virgil was one of those
guys.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Virgil had his own table set up. I roll up to Virgil, and I just start talking to him, and he's like, hey, what's your name? I'm like, Scott. And he's like, okay, cool. He gets out an 8x10. He writes, to Scott. He goes, you want me to sign this? And I was like, hey, sure. Great. He's like, all right. To Scott, Virgil. That'll be $20. I'm like, whoa, whoa. Wait a second. I never agreed to this. The guys I was with rolled the other direction. And leave me standing there with Virgil on the hook for handing the dude a $20 bill for this photo that I still have to this day that says, to Scott, be cool, Virgil.
See, I've heard that story.
He's a hustler, dude.
Right, that was a great story, but I've heard exactly that story like 100 fucking times because that's what he does.
Oh, dude. He's next level hustler.
I heard a story, I forget where I heard it, but one time somebody showed up with a belt at some WrestleCon or whatever. And he was like, hey, man, you want me to take a picture with the belt? He's like, yeah, can I get a picture of you with the belt? And I think it was $1 million belt. And then he signed it. And then he was like, that'd be $20. And the dude was like, dude, you just wrote on my belt. Like,
yep.
I didn't want you to sign that. Like,
yep.
And I don't want to give you $20. But what are you going to do, you know?
And not to keep going back to wrestling figures, but Mattel actually released a Virgil figure.
Uh-huh.
That when Virgil goes and sits at a booth by himself, he hangs up a sign that says WWE
right,
Superstar.
Right, right, right.
The figure comes with a sign that says WWE Superstar. So if you have a little table, you can put your Virgil figure at it with WWE Superstar.
Yeah,
he's at his own signing.
Yeah, it has the little stars.
Yeah, exactly. The little stars on it. Incredible. But that's Virgil today.
Yeah.
It's just big money hustler.
But he's one of those guys, like anyone who watched wrestling back in the day, is like, nobody forgot about Virgil.
Nope.
You know?
I mean, he's making that Olive Garden money.
Exactly. Yeah, getting that meat sauce.
What's up, you guys? Thanks for listening to part one of our Black History Month episode. This was originally going to be one episode, but it went pretty long, so we figured why not just split it up into two, and we can celebrate Black History Month longer into the month. So, part two will be up in a couple weeks, and we hope you will check that out. We hope you enjoyed this one, and we will see you soon. Thanks for listening. Cheers.